Welcome to Food for Thought. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau with Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, and a cooking DVD. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. I hope you're all doing well out there. Thank you to those of you who have sent me letters via email and via snail mail. As always, your email may be unanswered as of yet, but it is not forgotten. I promise I will reply to it whenever I can, as soon as I can. Thank you to those who have left comments on places like iTunes. Strangely enough, several of your comments have actually disappeared, and though I've written to iTunes several times about this, it hasn't been rectified yet. So if you've written in the past, if you've placed comments on iTunes in the past and your comment is gone, you might want to go check it out. Perhaps you'd like to repost, and feel free to leave a comment if you haven't done so already, if you feel inclined to do so. Also, please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If you're listening regularly instead of just downloading the individual files, just subscribe. If you go to CompassionateCooks.com and click on listen to the podcast or listen to podcasts, you'll see a number of options, a number of podcatchers, they're called, with whom you can subscribe. It's very easy. If you'd like to send me an email, have any questions for me, any suggestions for me, you can do so at podcast@CompassionateCooks.com. I'm very grateful to the podcast sponsors. I'm very, very grateful to all of you, and I'm just thrilled with the response we've been getting from the podcast. Our most popular sponsorship level is the $10 a month level, which is really easy to set up. You just visit CompassionateCooks.com, and you click on Support Our Podcast, and once you set this payment schedule up, you don't have to do anything else except take pride in the fact that you're helping make this podcast possible. We send you a recipe of your choosing right off the bat, and then every 3 months, as a $10 a month sponsor, you'll receive not just a recipe, but a recipe packet, which consists of 5 or 6 recipes. We have a number of themes and cuisines to choose from, including desserts and tofu or tempeh or soups and stews, low-fat sandwiches, Mediterranean, Indian, you name it, we have it. So that's one of the perks of becoming a regular sponsor. You get several recipes every few months just in time to change the rotation of your repertoire so you don't get stuck in a rut. So thank you very much for whatever you can do. I've mentioned before that I plan on doing some episodes to guide teenage vegetarians, how to talk to their parents about it, how to cope with being the lone vegetarian voice in a family of non-vegetarians, what to do if your parents are wary of or not supportive of your being vegetarian. And I promise to address these issues. Today, however, I want to talk about something that's very close to my heart and something I've been thinking about for a very long time, particularly in light of a letter I received from a father who wrote to me a couple months ago and with whom I had a brief correspondence. I want to honor him today as the sponsor of this episode, which is fitting considering his initial letter to me, which I was very moved by. Here's an excerpt from his email. His name is Chris Boyd. He wrote, "I've recently made the decision to become vegan. It's been a few months now, and I already know it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. I feel healthier. I've lost some unwanted weight, but those things are really just a bonus, not the reason I made this choice. I originally made the choice to go vegan because I finally woke up to the unbelievable suffering going on so that humans can eat meat. And I was a big meat eater. The day I first saw some of the undercover video shot on factory farms was the day I made the decision, and I haven't looked back. After watching the videos, I looked at our dog and suddenly had a completely different emotional response to her. Suddenly, I feel more connected to her and other animals and the environment. But now I have a dilemma. I have 2 daughters, ages 8 and 11, who have been brought up eating meat. A couple years ago, when my younger daughter was 6, we were at a seafood restaurant. The wait person brought out a plate of crab legs for my wife. My daughter just stared at it with her mouth hanging open. Finally, she said, 'They're so mean to crabs here.' And of course, my wife and I thought that was so sweet and cute. And ultimately, we managed to desensitize both our daughters so that they no longer react to meat with that kind of natural compassion and feeling. It breaks my heart that I've spent the last 10 years teaching my daughters to ignore their natural impulse to feel sympathy for animals. So what do I do now?" Needless to say, I was and am profoundly touched by Chris's sensitivity and compassion and humility, and it breaks my heart to hear him accuse himself of desensitizing his daughters, because I'm sure he has sensitized them to many, many things. His request for help was very unique and interesting, because I don't think there are a lot of resources out there for his kind of predicament. There are many resources for parents of vegetarian children, how to support them, and resources to support vegetarians who live in a world of non-vegetarians. But I don't think there are a lot of resources for parents who want to resensitize their children, at least not explicit ones, not obvious examples. So that's what I want to talk about today. And I thank you, Chris, for your honesty and your openness and your sincerity. And I thank you for your generous support. I'm sure you'll be an inspiration not only to other parents, but no doubt to your daughters as well. Many of you who have attended my cooking classes have heard my story. I grew up eating standard American fare, turkey sandwiches, ice cream, chicken pot pie, hamburgers, ground beef, hot dogs, you name it. My father owned ice cream stores, and we had a separate freezer just for ice cream, dairy-based ice cream. We had lots of ice cream. I didn't necessarily choose these foods. They were chosen for me. Nobody told me what they were. And when I asked, my parents and the adults around me, other adults around me, either evaded the question entirely or deceived me completely. Early on, I learned that animals were arbitrarily categorized in our society into those worthy of our compassion and those undeserving of it because they happened to be of a particular species or bred for a particular use. I learned puppies good, calves food. I remember the day we adopted our dog. I begged for the gray one, and though my mother insisted we should get the black one, I've always wondered if I was the one who persuaded her to get the little gray one. She barked more than the others, which my mom complained about, but she and I bonded right away, and I couldn't wait to take her home and give her all the love I had. I loved animals deeply, probably no more than most children, but I was always very, very sensitive to suffering. I still am. My heart literally aches if I see someone suffer, particularly animals and children. It's the suffering of the helpless that has always made me react very strongly. And my parents and my sister did accuse me of being emotional, but all in all, they were supportive of my desire to help. When a bird fell in our yard with an injured wing once, I built a little house for her until she was well enough to fly again. If homeless dogs made their way to my doorstep, I brought them in until I could find their people. I don't mind telling you that my mother had to carry me out of the movie Benji when I was crying so hard. I must have been 4 or 5 years old. I was absolutely sobbing. There are movies that do that to me today. I don't know if you've ever heard of these films. Robert Bresson's movie Balthazar. Unbelievable, beautiful, beautiful film, but also very painful. Vittorio De Sica's Umberto D is a fantastic film, and a French film that came out about 10 years ago about a little girl named Ponette. The name of the movie was Ponette. And these are some movies that affect me very deeply. I do watch comedies sometimes, but I'm very drawn to stories about how we treat one another and how we create suffering and how we overcome it. So anyway, my parents were pretty supportive of these episodes when I was young, you know, helping me help the bird and helping me help the dog. And like most parents, they dressed me in clothing that depict adorable baby animals. They hung pictures and mobiles of animals in my room. They bought me stuffed animals that eventually crowded me out of my bed. They read me tons of books about animals or books that used animals to teach lessons of respect and compassion. Books that used animals to teach me how to read, how to count, how to spell. I mean, really fundamental lessons. We sang songs about animals when we were children, songs by animals, right? We played games that mimicked animals. We played in playgrounds where murals of animals and where slides and swings and toys all depict animals. But what they didn't tell me was that they were feeding me the dismembered bodies of animals, the very same animals I was brought to the zoo to admire, the very same animals whose wings I helped mend. And that's why I do think the process of desensitizing children to animal suffering, that the process of compartmentalizing animals into convenient categories of use, abuse, love, depending on who the animal is or what species they're from, is the most detrimental thing we can do to children. And ultimately, we do this to ourselves and each other because these children grow up to become us. When I was old enough to understand that I was eating animals, I was told that they gave their lives for us. And yet I've never heard of an animal who sacrificed himself for human pleasure. It's what we tell ourselves because it's easier than admitting that we take their lives. I can assure you, they fight tooth and claw with every bit of strength they have left to keep the last thing they possess in the end, their very lives. I was taught that the injured bird who was lucky enough to fall into my yard was worth saving, but the chickens and turkeys who I was deceptively told gave their lives for me were valuable only insofar as their flesh was tender and juicy. Chickadees, friends, chickens, dinner. When I discovered what had been methodically hidden from me for so long, I stopped eating first land animals, then marine animals, and then their eggs and milk. And throughout this process, I slowly discarded the mantle of ignorance and self-deception and slowly was able to truly manifest the innate compassion with which I had been born. It was a profound and liberating experience. However, very interestingly, my parents and other people didn't quite react the same way as they did when I was a child. Helping injured birds or taking in stray animals were considered admirable childhood pursuits. But when that very same compassion, no different in substance, followed me into adulthood and extended to pigs and cattle, chickens, and other animals killed for human consumption, it was met with hostility and suspicion. The message was limited compassion, good. Unconditional compassion, bad. The message also was almost childhood compassion, good. Adult compassion, bad. Even my parents took it personally, accusing me of accusing them of not feeding me well or being bad parents. I remember many, many years ago when I visited my mother for dinner right around the time I stopped eating land animals, she had made roast beef, and I reminded her that I didn't eat roast beef. She said that she remembered, she knew that, but she went to the trouble of making it for me, so she knew I would eat it for her. I would eat it for her. I didn't eat it for her, and a very unpleasant evening followed, but my mother doesn't do that anymore. That was just part of her own process of, you know, dealing with my new lifestyle. And in fact, when she visits us now, she eats completely vegan the whole time, and she was here for Thanksgiving, our joyful Thanksgiving feast that we have every year with all our friends, and it was a pleasure to have her join us. Now, I understand now why she did what she did then. I understand now that she felt my decision to stop eating animals was a reflection on her having raised me eating them, and I'm sure she felt judged and guilty. And for the record, I didn't judge her or blame her or make her feel guilty, but the mirror unwittingly held up by me made her feel that way. So for those of you who are new vegetarians, it's very helpful, I think, to understand that's what's happening when your family responds with defensiveness or hostility to your new lifestyle. It has nothing to do with you. And why shouldn't our parents be defensive? I mean, think about it. Our eating habits are so deeply ingrained, tied to our most basic needs and our earliest memories. As children, we received applause for finishing our dinner and admonishments for not cleaning our plates. Food was used as both a reward and punishment, and the eating habits and patterns with which we grew up still inform our adult choices. Even more than that, our earliest experiences of being nurtured and loved were when we were fed by our parents, held in their arms, an experience that inextricably linked food with our parents' love. It's no wonder they feel slighted when we tell them that we're now shunning the very things they put in our mouths while they gave us their attention and smiles and love and nurturing and nourishment. So it's important to keep that in mind, that their intentions were good, even if their messages were mixed. Now, I'm not one of these people who believe that parents are limiting their children's choices by raising them vegetarian. I think it couldn't be farther from the truth. I think it's quite the opposite. By feeding children animals, we're actually taking away their choices. They have no idea that the process of desensitization has begun. They can't choose another way. Now, some do after they read Charlotte's Web or have it read to them or seeing a movie like Babe. They do decide not to eat animals. And some parents respect that and I applaud them for that. others boast of tricking their children into eating animals still by hiding the, you know, the meat in their dinner, etc. But to raise children with equal opportunity, compassion, and awareness is to make them informed, aware, thoughtful, conscious people. It's to arm them with all the information that's appropriate at each stage of their development, leaving them to make truly informed choices when they're old enough to do so. Now, for those of you who weren't raised with such information like me, I liken that experience to sleepwalking. I was asleep. Many of you know of what I speak. My compassion had been dulled, and I had to be shaken, literally shaken out of my slumber with pictures of horrific abuse and dismemberment. Now, forgive my constant reference to film, but if you've ever seen the 1962 version of The Manchurian Candidate, and please do so if you haven't, there's a scene in which a character is being forced out of a hypnotic state. And I always think of that moment. It's a great visual for the awakening that I see people experience and that I experienced myself. I always think of that moment when this character is trembling and sweating and struggling until he shakes his head as if literally, physically shaking off the spell he's been under. That's how I think of this process. The day I discovered my role in this socially sanctioned dynamic of selective compassion was the day I woke up, literally. Having been conditioned to compartmentalize my compassion and suppress my mercy for animals, my lifestyle as a non-vegan was not truly reflecting my principles of nonviolence, of simplicity, of kindness. I can't imagine hurting another living being intentionally, and yet I was paying someone else to do it for me. Once I knew, once I was a witness, I couldn't but act, and the natural response was to stop participating in a system that commodifies and kills animals for human pleasure, for my pleasure. Now, living fully awake can be painful. I wouldn't tell you that it's not. After all, ignorance is bliss, right? Ignorance is bliss, but it's really only bliss for those who aren't the victims. But I wouldn't trade that. I wouldn't trade that pain. I wouldn't trade that heartbreak for all the world, because only a truly open heart can break. If we close our hearts, if we close ourselves off, not just to joy, but also to pain, we're not fully living. We're not fully conscious. We're not fully embracing all that life entails, all that life brings. It brings pain, it brings sorrow, as well as joy. One of the things I'm most intrigued by is how much we value childhood innocence. When I was a child, I acted compassionately without any thought, as if I didn't know any better than to respond to those who needed my help. It just came naturally. Now that I'm an adult, I act compassionately with thought. But our society doesn't seem to value that. The innocent kindness of a child is valued more than the informed kindness of an adult. Why is that? It's as if we're encouraged to abandon our empathy and compassion on the threshold of adulthood. Is that what we really want for ourselves? Is that what we want for our children? And we do it every day. We do it all the time. To people like Chris, to those parents who have been shaken out of their hypnosis before their children, I urge you, please be kind, please be gentle with yourself. You raised your children in such a way that reflected your values at the time. You did what you thought was right, and if you can have transformation, so can they. I think the best advice I can give you is to just be consistent and be truthful. And this is what I would say to anyone, to children or teenagers or adults whose parents or friends or acquaintances don't take their compassion seriously. Talk to them. Talk to your parents. Talk to your children. Tell them why you've changed the way you eat. Tell them how it makes you feel that you didn't tell them what it was you were feeding them all along. Give them the space, respect, and time to have their own experiences, their own transformations. Whenever I hear about people who've been raised vegetarian, sometimes I think they're so lucky. But frankly, I wouldn't trade my experience of awakening. It was profound and life-changing. Let them have their experience. Let them have their transformation. Also, I don't think it's effective to forbid your children to eat meat outside of the house when you don't have control over what they're eating, particularly if you're a parent in Chris's position where you raised your children as meat eaters and now you're changing the way everyone eats in the house. You have to learn how to deal with that process that takes place for the children in their social situations. You know, they have their own friends and they have their own social interactions. And so that will be part of the process of communicating how this feels and what this means. And again, part of them actually taking on that consciousness and taking on that understanding, that will come very naturally. So I don't think forbidding your children to eat the meat outside the house is going to be effective. I think if anything, they'll just rebel. I think they'll just, it'll backfire. There are wonderful humane education resources out there that I think would also be really helpful, that you can look at together as a family and that you can read as a parent and that you can give your children to read as well on their own. Check out the International Institute for Humane Education. The website is www.iihed as in dog, iihed.org. And that link is also on the Compassionate Cooks website. They have lots of resources on their website and you can contact them for more. Let your children know they can ask any questions they might have and respond with truth, as I said before. Be consistent, be compassionate, and be patient. I think the power of example is the most profound gift we can give to one another. And I think it's one of the most effective, powerful things, particularly in terms of animal consciousness. And it's why I think having other like-minded people in your life is also really helpful, not just to raise the consciousness of your children, but to provide support for you as well. Find a vegetarian meetup in your area, start one yourself, host vegetarian potlucks, I don't care. Just do something so that you're finding like-minded people. They're out there, I promise you, they are out there. If there are any vegetarian groups or animal groups in your area, contact them. They have the resources that you need. I admire you. I admire all of you. I admire Chris. I admire all of you who are open. I don't necessarily admire people because they're vegan. I admire people because they're open, guiding others along the way. I think it's so silly that we place so much emphasis on celebrities being good role models for our children, whether they're athletes or actors or models or whatever. I don't think they have some greater responsibility for being role models for society's children, good or bad. I think we all have that responsibility. The neighbors, the mail carriers, the teachers, the doctors, strangers, passersby, we all have a responsibility to demonstrate kindness, compassion, empathy, respect, and integrity, to mirror that to our children, to society's children, human and non-human, young and old, wherever someone is on their path. That's what we need to mirror to one another. We can resensitize each other by displaying these values in our words, in our actions. Even if we've been part of the desensitization process, we can turn it around. It takes courage to say that we were wrong. It takes courage to admit that we didn't know better at one time. It takes courage to commit to doing things differently once we do know. It takes courage and integrity. And by embodying these qualities in ourselves, we inspire others to find them in themselves. The process of desensitization was full and complete by the time I was a young adult, really by the time I was a teenager, and I'm just grateful it wasn't irreversible. I willfully and willingly rebelled against every message I received that told me to turn back, to return to my sleep, to return to my ignorance. It certainly would have been a lot easier. But I rebelled, and I fought, and I continue to defy anyone who insists there's something wrong with unfettered compassion. If that's my legacy, if that's the worst thing I can be accused of, then I wear that criticism with pride. May you create for yourself and the children of the world a legacy of unabashed, unconditional, unrestrained compassion. May we all resensitize one another and help break the spell under which we've been living. For the animals, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.